Hello, humans. Welcome to the Chill the Fuck Out podcast. I'm your host, Ashley O'Brien. Welcome to a space meant to be for you to pause your day, week, month, or even year, to take a breath and a moment for yourself with yourself. A place to discuss, learn, grow through, and maybe even laugh about mental illness, trauma, abuse, mental health, emotional difficulties, healing, and what we can do to overcome it all, to live and be present in lives we love. Hello, humans. I hope you're having an awesome day. Today, we are talking about self-care practices. It's a hot topic right now, and for good reason, but how does it fit into the lives of survivors of childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse? There are things that are being spouted all over the place by well-meaning experts, creators, and influencers, and people who love us about staying positive, self-love, mindfulness, meditation, and so on. But for survivors of childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse, self-love, self-care, and anything associated with it can seem impossible and frustrating. Mindfulness activities can seem impossible because sitting still with ourselves or putting ourselves first can seem like a dangerous and triggering experience. Our survival beliefs, narratives, our survival-focused inner child, and maladapted coping mechanisms tell us it's selfish, neglectful of others, and far too vulnerable. I'd like to discuss what all of this is, as I understand it, and how survivors might be able to learn to utilize these things as tools for helping us to create the mental and emotional freedom we are all striving for, so we can live our lives as well as possible. So why is it so hard for survivors of childhood trauma to take advantage or get the benefits of self-love, self-care, and mindfulness exercises and practices? The simple answer, it's our subconscious narrative and beliefs. Not so simple, really. Sidebar rant, until about a year ago, I had tried desperately at times to meditate and do all the self-care things that left me feeling good and not guilty, and talk nice to myself, but I failed over and over again. I had researched and learned and tried tons of things, most of them referring to changing my narrative, my self-talk, and what my subconscious was telling me. I tried. Nothing worked. Sometimes I'd feel better during parts of the actual activity, but it never lasted. I got to a point where if something depended on me changing my subconscious, I avoided it. I was fed up. I was sure my subconscious was stuck where it was, and I had no way to change it. So I'd still do some of the self-care things, but with the acceptance that it would provide only temporary relief, but at least it was relief from the internal pain, my swirling brain, and inflammatory and sometimes hateful self-talk, even if the relief was only for an hour. So if you're in a spot where you're this kind of frustrated and about to turn this off, please hear me out. I get it. I'm not here to tell you to just keep trying and someday it'll just work. I genuinely want to help you understand why this is so fucking frustrating and what you might be able to do about it. I always keep a disclaimer at the end of each episode, but I haven't said it during an episode in a bit. I am not a mental health professional. I always recommend you do your own research and make your own decisions about your mental health and seek out professional help when you feel your mental illness is disrupting your life and it seems like nothing you've tried works. Part of how we heal is by taking responsibility for our mental health where we are at right now. And sometimes that means we have to ask for help. So, getting back into it, let's discuss the subconscious mind and why it's the answer and the key to benefiting from self-care activities and meditation. That's right, brain science. Let's see how this non-scientist does with this. What is the subconscious? First, during my research, there was some information about there being a difference between the subconscious and the unconscious. I didn't realize this was a confusion until I was confused by it. So let me see if I can untangle it. To use the terms subconscious and unconscious, some say they are interchangeable. Some try to define them separately as subconscious being something we can more easily access through intentional recall, and unconscious being our narratives, instincts, and survival mechanisms that we can't consciously interact with. The final piece of research I found on this was a blog post on Harvard Health by an MD that made it way more simple. Thank you for that, Dr. Miller. He explains that Freud made both of these terms popular and used them interchangeably until he made greater discoveries and eventually decided on unconscious as the term for the part of the mind that is not in conscious control. Dr. Miller also explains that for many decades, professionals in the field relating to psychology and neurology have used the term unconscious, and subconscious is usually only used by laypeople or non-professionals. So I will try to remember to use the word unconscious going forward, but if I do say subconscious, I mean the same thing. I'll link those sources for that discussion in the show notes so you can decide for yourself. So what is the unconscious? From an article in Psychology Today, the unconscious is the vast sum of operations of the mind that take place below the level of conscious awareness. The conscious mind contains all the thoughts, feelings, cognitions, and memories we acknowledge, while the unconscious consists of deeper mental processes not readily available to the conscious mind. Much learning, especially recognition of complex patterns, takes place outside of the conscious awareness. Similarly, many of the elements that go into judgments and decision-making are processed outside of awareness. Intuition also is a product of unconscious mental operations, a set of assumptions swiftly assembled from the cumulative knowledge and experience. Much of human motivation and interpersonal attraction also take shape beyond conscious awareness. In my own words and understanding for this discussion, the unconscious mind is the part of our brain that produces our base learned beliefs about ourselves, others, and the world, including beliefs about safety, danger, and worthiness. It produces our instinctual reactions based on these beliefs. For survivors, this often includes our maladaptive coping mechanisms, those habits, responses, and experiences that feel automatic and out of our control that are the presentation of our mental illness, like dissociation or shutting down or feeling numb or reaching for food or other substances. That becomes our soother. In many ways, our unconscious mind creates our reality. It creates our ability or inability to succeed in all aspects of life. It's easy to feel like this means we're out of control of it, and that means it's not even worth trying. But the BEAUT of this is that our unconscious mind is our greatest protector. It's doing everything it's doing based on all of your combined experiences and knowledge to protect you. The trouble for survivors is that all of our experiences and knowledge, especially from early life, and if we haven't processed our trauma and or worked toward healing, tells us that we are always or often in danger and we have to protect ourselves with what's worked in the past. Which, when we were innocent, helpless children being traumatized by the adults and events in our lives, was to freeze, fawn, dissociate, shut down, numb out, people please, isolate, and so on. So as adult survivors, we have unconscious narratives, beliefs, programming that tells us we need to do the same things, but now those reactions aren't helping us survive, they're hurting our ability to really live. For many of us, trying to meditate, consciously change our thinking to just be more positive, always trying to just focus on the future and never the past, and trying to change our habits without addressing the underlying survival need behind them will leave us in failure, frustration, proven self-doubt, negative self-talk, and back where we started, or worse, because we respond to these failures with destructive behavior and a reinforcement of our believed lack of safety and unworthiness. So what can we do about it? How do we change the unconscious narrative, programming, and beliefs that we can't consciously access? First, we have to answer the question, where did that programming come from? At this point, most, if not all of us, know that it comes from our traumatic childhood and potentially reinforcing adulthood experiences. Second, How do we overcome our appropriate at the time and self-protective reactions to these experiences and memories? This is the part where I give you the answer none of us want to hear, because it tends to be the scariest route to take and the one most of us avoid as long as possible, sometimes through our whole lives. You have to face those experiences and memories, process them, and learn tools for how to minimize your emotional and physical response to them, and then make conscious decisions about how you respond to them now and moving forward. This happens by asking for and receiving help. You can do this by seeking out professional help from psychologists, therapists, and counselors. You can also go alternative routes, including hypnotherapy. Although I now recommend seeking out someone who also has a psychology background. I'm saying this now as a little shift in my viewpoint after recently listening to an episode of the Huberman Lab podcast in which he interviewed Dr. David Spiegel. I think it's Spiegel, who is a psychologist who uses and promotes the use of hypnosis in and for mental illness and mental health treatment. I'll put a link to that episode in the show notes if you're interested. Then there's somatic therapies. Then there's self-guided programs focused on your specific mental illness and trauma survivor presentation. There are lots of guided workbooks, journals, and recorded programs that may be easier to attain because of cost or schedule and more approachable for some than asking for help directly from another person. So back to the topic of this episode, in my understanding and experience, all of these methods do and will include and encourage the use of self-care tools and practices as a part of your healing process and relearning how to exist beyond your trauma. The bottom line is that it is quite difficult to change the unconscious, maladapted, protective narrative and instincts without processing and healing the trauma we've been through. To change my view of myself from I'm damaged goods, unworthy of love, acceptance, and success, and I'll always have to work twice as hard to have half as much, which is not an exaggeration. This is something I believed at one point. To change that to I'm capable of healing and being whole again. I am a strong survivor. I'm worthy of love and acceptance, and I am capable of creating everything that I want. It took me about 6 months of weekly therapy to start hearing this change in myself and how I spoke to myself. It took another about 6 months to really believe it, and about another 6 months of practicing listening to it and changing my habits and reactions consciously to feel like it is stronger, louder, and more dependable than my former beliefs. This is not meant to scare anyone away from any part of this work. In fact, I hope it's encouraging. If you do this work, within 6 months, you can be a completely different version of yourself. You can make amazing amounts of progress in a week, a month, 3 months, 6 months. I just want to be sure that I'm making my point clearly. You are absolutely capable of change, healing, and creating the life that you want. But you will have a greater challenge if you try to do so without addressing the underlying causes of your mental illness from childhood trauma. Another sidebar rant real quick. I do want to say that I really struggle to find any value in people being told or trying to practice just being positive. I find it quite invalidating of basic humanness. For me, when I've tried to adopt just be positive or always choose positivity or focus on the positive, it's left me feeling severely anxious and completely out of touch with myself because I'm basically telling myself that all of the other experiences and feelings and states of mind are bad and wrong and something to shove away and ignore. I understand that for many this has been a powerful tool, but for me it's just been an experience of shoving my real needs down and further ignoring the actual problem, which perpetuated my mental, emotional, and habitual struggles and often caused a stronger self-destructive action because my inner child and base maladapted survival instincts were crying out. But all I was doing was trying to paint on a pretty mask of positivity to hide it all and make other people comfortable, which is not my responsibility. So when I'm talking about mindfulness, meditation, and self-care, I will never be promoting the use or talking about trying to just be positive. It is natural for human beings to feel and experience sadness, anger, grief, emotional pain, resentment, jealousy, shame, and whatever other emotions we are told or we are choosing to try to avoid. If it wasn't natural, we wouldn't experience it. If we instead learn to face these emotions, let ourselves experience them, and view them as signals and messages about our needs, and then learn to respond to those needs in safe, healthy ways, we will be able to heal our hurts, fulfill our needs, build greater mental and emotional resilience and flexibility, and become more capable and naturally more happy and satisfied people, which is what I would love for all of us to experience. So thanks for listening to that. I'll get off the soapbox. So how can meditation, mindfulness, and self-care help us in our journey and be effective along the way? Often knowing why something helps or the mechanisms of how it helps can make it easier for us to accomplish what we're trying to do by practicing one of these things. So we need to answer the question, what's the point? Self-care. The point of practicing self-care is first to soothe. Many of our maladaptive coping mechanisms are aimed at soothing or calming our hurts and reactions to hurts and triggers. In some therapy methods, these are called firefighters. They can include substance abuse, binge eating yourself into sedation, overspending, etc. All the things that give us a dopamine dump and temporarily dampen our fight or flight reaction. Self-care practices are aimed at consciously deciding how to soothe yourself. For survivors, this means we first have to practice awareness. We have to learn to become aware of when we are triggered, often by recognizing the emotions, thoughts, and physical sensations that accompany being triggered. Once you're able to start recognizing these experiences, then you can start making conscious decisions about how you soothe yourself. One of the things that makes trying to practice self-care so difficult for survivors who aren't yet progressed in their healing process is that often, even if we become good at being aware of our triggers and our responses, we can't overcome our maladapted protective reactions. So it becomes this experience of now we're aware of our triggers, aware of our responses, and aware of our maladapted coping mechanisms. But we feel powerless against them because they are stronger than our conscious ability to try to choose how we soothe ourselves. To survivors, this is a frustrating but typical reaction and experience. You are not alone in this, and it is not a hopeless effort, I promise. So how do we overcome our maladapted superhero protectors in our unconscious mind? We've already covered seeking out help for processing your traumatic experiences so you can decrease the intensity of your reactions and learn and use healthy tools to cope with what's left. But part of what you can do before, during, and beyond your healing journey as a part of your self-care is understanding that self-care can be a practice in saving yourself. Something that's been powerful for me is learning to view my strong trigger-reactive experiences as coming from my inner child or former child self, and separating that form of me from my adult self now. I recognize that my feelings of being unsafe, unworthy, incapable, and alone are coming from my former or inner child self. And as my adult self now, I am and can be strong, dependable, action-taking, successfully protective, supported, loved, accepted, and so on. To practice and be successful with self-care activities, it will take practicing patience and compassion with and for yourself. I say practicing a lot because that's what we have to do through all of our healing. We are learning and relearning how to view and respond to ourselves, our environment, other people, and our experiences. Learning takes practice, sometimes a lot of practice. I say patience with ourselves because learning and practice takes time and repeated effort. which requires patience, just like with any child or student. I say compassion as opposed to empathy, because empathy is feeling the feelings and internalizing it as a way to relate to and understand, but it often means reliving the experiences, which can have the opposite effect of what you're trying to create. Compassion is feeling for the inner child from the viewpoint of your strong, capable, protective adult self, seeing the inner child's pain, fear, and suffering as a caring, supportive, and loving outsider looking in. This sort of separation allows you to be the adult in the situation that maybe you wished you would have had back then, and be that adult for yourself now. One of the things I've learned to practice is when I am soothing myself with a conscious, chosen self-care activity, especially if it's in response to trying to mitigate the effect of being triggered, is to remember and even visualize me as my adult, capable, trustworthy, protective self now, taking care of and even saving my inner child self. Now, this can be a little tricky because if you haven't learned and practiced processing or visualizing your child self, typically guided by a professional, in this way, you can get sucked into remembering and potentially being hurt again by remembering a trauma you went through as a child. So, beyond seeking out professional help, I highly recommend that if you move into this direction, you start this lightly, and with the idea that you are only interacting with your child self and what you can do to soothe yourself, and not the actual experience that may be the base or cause of your trigger, unless you've done that part of the work in learning how to respond in a healthy way to those experiences. Once you've started working with a professional or an independent program, you will have more significant and tailored guidance with this. But in the meantime, the greatest advice I feel I can give you along the lines of self-care practices is build awareness of your triggers and reactions. Make a conscious decision about how you'd rather soothe yourself. Fortify your efforts by remembering that you are taking action as your capable adult self now to soothe and comfort your inner child. Always remember to try to practice patience with yourself. At first, you are going to lose against your stronger, instinctual, maladapted, protective habits. And even once you're good at this, sometimes you will still be overcome by those learned coping mechanisms. It takes time, effort, patience, and bravery to start and to continue. But you can do this, and you are worthy of the effort and the eventual positive outcomes. So for types of self-care, I found a list of 101 self-care practices for trauma survivors on beautyafterbruises.org. I will link it in the show notes. But for now, I will just tell you my favorite self-care practices. There are just so many different ways to go about it that it would just take way too long to try to list them all. So for me, personal time in the morning. For a lot of my life, I've slept hard and woken up anxious. I used to respond to this by getting up and hustling, which sounds like a good thing, but what it felt like was running or fleeing from something that was after me. And by the afternoon, I was exhausted and running off of caffeine and feeling burnt out. And by the afternoon, I was exhausted, running off of caffeine, and feeling totally burnt out and unmotivated. Living like this led me to being overweight, having blood sugar problems, and blood pressure problems. So, over the last year, I've learned that I highly benefit from having an hour or two to myself in the morning. I've changed my schedule so that I get up a little earlier and set appropriate boundaries and expectations with my partner and those I interact with on a daily basis about me basically just being unavailable the first couple of hours of the morning. This means I can take my time waking up. This is also usually when I work out, meditate, journal, purposefully daydream, and make plans. It helps me set the tone for my day and helps me to start by caring for myself instead of running in a panic, which also helps to mitigate the opportunity for me to be triggered the rest of the day. I love walking outside. I think a lot of people get turned off by the idea of self-care and mindfulness practices because there's this perception that it's all about sitting quietly with yourself until something magical happens or something. But one of the most powerful and easy ways for me to pull myself out of a mental emotional cycle or dissociation or just shift from a work mindset to a play mindset is to go for a walk outside. It can be short or long, difficult exercise or easy stroll, but it's the easiest way for me to shift my brain. I get to be in nature, away from screens, feeling my body and breathing more naturally. I also love cooking. Anything with steps to follow and a dependable outcome can be so soothing when my mind or emotions feel chaotic. Also, creating something comforting or familiar can bring up positive memories and feelings. And then trying something new or creating something of my own creation can be exciting. And all of these things can help me break out of destructive mental emotional cycles and help me be more present and even joyful. Then there's brushing, walking, and playing with our cats. We have two cats. We call them Kits. They are our fur babies. We love them. And sometimes when I'm at a loss for what I need, but I just don't feel good mentally or emotionally, it helps to play with and pamper our kits. It's a way for me to focus on another living being, my ability to do for and care for them. And they give back to me by being cute as fuck and constantly helping me to laugh and smile. They help me get out of my head and remind me that life can be simple and silly and enjoyable. I love being on or in the water. I have always been a water bug. I am a Pisces. I love swimming and floating. I've been stand-up paddleboarding for a couple of years and recently tried kayaking and I loved it. Being on or in the water is so soothing to me and helps me to disconnect from the sort of static that clogs up my mental and emotional experiences. It helps me reconnect to my body and what feels very natural to me. And the last thing I'll mention is practicing gratitude. Something I started doing a long time ago and have strengthened over time is saying a prayer of gratitude before I go to sleep. I just say it to myself in my head before and sometimes as I'm falling asleep. I think about everything I'm thankful for that I experienced or learned that day and anything and anyone else who comes to mind. As a part of this, I practice intensifying the feeling of gratitude and love I feel toward myself, those experiences, and the people in my life. For those who are not religious or spiritual, or even those who are, I often omit my views on spirituality because part of my abuses I've experienced were religious or spiritual people and even leaders using their knowledge of religion and spirituality to emotionally blackmail me and manipulate people and hurt me. I've also felt the overwhelming pressure to believe something that I'm not sure of, and when I question it, get rejected, humiliated, and hurt. I've also had the experience of realizing I've hurt someone I care about by trying to push my viewpoints onto them. I'm trying to learn from all of these experiences and trying to find the balance between delivering what I want to deliver without being pushy or hurtful. So if you're not into praying, this is something you can just practice saying to yourself. You can just say to yourself, I'm thankful for, and go from there. Just find what works for you and do that. So then talking about mindfulness specifically as part of self-care practices. Mindfulness, in my understanding, is a practice in building and maintaining your awareness of yourself mentally, emotionally, and physically. It helps us to more effectively recognize what we're doing, why, and how it makes us feel and react, and what that means for our life. Mindfulness then can be used to help us understand more effectively why we're doing what we're doing. And that knowledge creates a path for us to start taking action to change in the ways that we want to. Mindfulness practices are often focused on helping us to be more grounded and present. Often mindfulness techniques can be used to help with mitigating dissociation and triggered responses by bringing us back into the present. Mindfulness can be a way to stop or pause what's going on, recenter yourself, or come back to yourself, and then make conscious decisions about what you want to happen next. So what are types of mindfulness practices? Meditation's a big one, probably the main one you'll hear most people talk about, or when you research it, it comes up a lot. But it's a really big topic and one that's more sensitive to talk about for people who have gone through trauma. So I'm going to talk about that later. Next is breathing exercises, like breathing in for a count of four and out for a count of four, and then increasing it and count five and then six and continuing until you can't grow it anymore, and paying attention to how your body and emotions change as you work through these slow breaths. There are many types of breathing techniques, and you can do a web search or look up videos for guided breathing exercises to figure out what works best for you. But as a basic rule, taking deep breaths and releasing them slowly while paying attention to your body relaxing helps you shift into a more calm mindset and away from your fight or flight response. Attention exercises. Anything that helps you be more aware of yourself, your environment, and your current reality helps ground you in the present and mitigate your maladapted reactions and coping mechanisms. This can be something like the counting exercise, where you find five things you can see, five things you can hear, and five things that are touching you, and then four of each, and then three, and then two, and then one. Or describing part of your current reality in great detail out loud, and what experience you might be having with it, like eating. Describe the food, the texture, the taste, the smell, the physical sensations it causes as you chew and swallow, the balance of the flavors, and so on. Just something that helps you be very present and shift into realizing your ability to control and even enjoy your current experience. Then there's body scanning, which combines breathing with paying attention to physical sensation. Find a comfortable spot, relax by taking a few deep breaths. Then starting at the top of your head or the tips of your toes, breathe in, and as you breathe out, focus on relaxing that part of your body, and then moving to the next part of your body until you're through to the other end of your body. Then take a few more deep breaths, and then notice how different your body and emotions feel. When you're ready, start wiggling your fingers and toes. Take a deep breath and stretch, as if waking up from sleep, and then sit or stand. There are a lot of different variations of this, but this is a basic format. It gets you out of your head, into your body, and practicing controlling your physical and emotional experiences. I found an awesome article explaining way more in depth about trauma-informed mindfulness techniques that might be helpful if you'd like to read that. I'll put it in the show notes. Now, I was planning to continue this discussion with specifically discussing meditation, but I want to delve deeper into meditation itself and need more time. So this will be a two-part episode, with meditation being the next part of this discussion. I will end here by saying, it's not your fault that these things are so difficult. Unconscious narratives and instincts from childhood trauma, neglect, and abuse are more powerful than our conscious ability to try to force our way past them. But you do have the power to change your narrative, beliefs, and reactions. Self-care and mindfulness practices are powerful tools that we all can learn to use to help with our healing and learning to love and accept ourselves. It takes time, repeated practice, patience, and compassion to relearn how to view, talk to, and treat ourselves. Please seek out professional guidance if you are struggling or realize that working on your own hasn't helped or maybe even has caused more hurt. It does not mean you're incapable, helpless, or a lost cause. It just means you need help learning new tools. You are worthy and you are capable. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon. If you'd like to write in to ask questions, request topic coverage, share an experience, or let me know how I can improve your experience with the pause, you can email me at ctfolistener@gmail.com. If you want to see the pause in your feed, like and subscribe on Instagram and Facebook by searching at ctfopausecast. Disclaimer. I am not a mental health professional or even a life coach. This podcast is not a substitute for professional mental health help. I am simply a healing survivor working to support a community I am a part of. I always encourage you to reach out, do your research, and find the professional help you need to overcome your internal obstacles and move forward. To that end, I will always post in show notes any resources I find and use, and any that listeners send in, as a way to make it easier for you to find the help that you need. With so much love and support, I hope you're feeling awesome. But if you aren't, I hope you can find a way to chill the fuck out.